Ever imagine inheriting a farm, only to find out, well, that it's been sold out from under you? That's exactly the situation we're diving into today. It all hinges on a lost deed from 1922.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking Harper v. Paradise, a case that, still has lawyers talking almost 50 years later.
Yeah.
A real legal thriller set in rural Georgia.
Yeah.
Family farm, a missing document, and a battle for ownership that goes all the way to the state Supreme Court.
Yeah, what makes this case so interesting is how this seemingly simple, inheritance situation turned into this tangled legal mess.
Yeah.
And it all started with Susan Harper's decision to give her daughter-in-law, Maude, a life estate in the family farm.
Okay, let's pause right there for a second. A life estate, I feel like that's a term you hear thrown around.
Right.
But what does it actually mean in practice, for people like me?
Imagine you have a beautiful house and you want a loved one to live there, for the rest of their life.
Right.
But you also want to make sure that the property ultimately goes to someone else after they're gone.
Yeah.
That's where a life estate comes in.
Okay.
It's like giving someone the right to live in, to use the property for their lifetime.
Okay.
But they don't have full ownership.
Gotcha.
They can't sell it. And when they die, the property passes to these designated heirs called the remainder men.
So in this case, Maude had the right to live on the farm till she passed.
Right.
But she couldn't just turn around and sell it.
Right.
Got it. But where does the whole lost deed drama come in?
Well, the deed officially granting Maude this life estate back in 1922 vanished.
Wow.
And as you might imagine, a missing deed can really throw a wrench into things, especially when it comes to proving ownership down the line.
I bet. So with this crucial document missing, what happened next? Did everyone just kind of shrug their shoulders and move on?
Not quite. In 1928, Susan's other heirs, recognizing the problem this missing deed created, decided to give Maude what's called a quitclaim deed.
Now, I'm guessing most of our listeners have heard of a quitclaim deed.
Right.
But it's one of those legal terms that's, like, worth revisiting.
Sure.
Could you break it down for us?
A quitclaim deed essentially says, I'm transferring whatever interest I might have in this property to you.
Okay.
But I'm not making any promises about what that interest is.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't guarantee clear ownership.
Okay.
It simply releases any potential claim the person giving the deed might have.
So it's more about clarifying the giver's position than confirming ownership.
Exactly. And in this case, they were basically saying, look, we don't know where that 1922 deed went,
right. But
whatever claim we might have inherited from Susan,
we're
giving it to Maude.
Okay.
But here's where it gets really interesting. This 1928 quitclaim deed, even though it was made without that original 1922 deed in hand,
right. Specifically
mentioned that lost document.
Really?
It's like they were saying, hey, just so everyone knows, there's another deed out there somewhere that dictates the real ownership situation.
Ah. So this little detail becomes a big deal later on. I can feel it.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
That seemingly insignificant reference to that missing 1922 deed ends up playing a crucial role in the court's final decision.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat. So quitclaim deed in hand. Did things settle down at that point?
Unfortunately, no. Life, as we know, rarely goes according to plan.
Of course.
Just a few years later, in 1933, Maude found herself in a bit of financial trouble and used the farm as collateral for a loan.
Oh, no.
You can probably guess what happened next.
Let me take a stab at it. She defaults on the loan. The lender forecloses. And the farm gets sold to someone else.
You nailed it.
Okay.
And this is where the Paradise brothers enter the picture.
Okay.
Fast forward to 1955, and they purchase the farm. Seemingly, they become the rightful owners. At this point, you could easily assume the story ends there.
Right.
Case closed.
Right.
But we wouldn't be talking about this case today if it were that simple. Something tells me there's more to this story. You have a good sense for legal drama.
Oh.
Because here comes the plot twist.
Okay.
In 1957, that long-lost 1922 deed resurfaces and is officially recorded.
Oh, wow.
Imagine the shockwaves this sent through everyone involved.
Hold on. More than 30 years later, the missing deed just reappears. It's like something out of a movie.
Right.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable. And to make matters even more complicated,
Maude,
the woman at the heart of this whole situation, passed away in 1972.
Okay. So now the stage is truly set.
Yeah.
We've got the 1922 deed back in play,
right,
confirming Maude's life estate.
Right.
And we've got the Paradise brothers, who believe they purchased the farm fair and square.
Right.
Who emerges victorious in this battle for ownership? That's what I'm dying to know.
That's the million-dollar question, and that's exactly what we'll unpack when we come back. Get ready for a deep dive into the legal arguments that shaped this landmark case.
Welcome back. Before we went away, we left off with that the reappearance of that long-lost 1922 deed and Maud's passing. Talk about, you know, setting the stage for a legal battle. So who ends up claiming victory in this property dispute?
Well, Maud's children, remember, they were named as the remainder men,
right,
meaning they were entitled to the farm after her life estate ended.
Right.
They stepped forward and challenged the Paradise Brothers' ownership.
Okay.
And what's fascinating is that the Supreme Court of Georgia ultimately sided with them.
Wow, really? I have to admit, I'm a bit surprised. It seemed like the Paradise Brothers had a pretty solid claim, having purchased the property years earlier. What was the court's reasoning? What tipped the scales in favor of Maud's children?
This is where that seemingly insignificant detail about the 1928 quitclaim deed comes back to haunt the Paradise Brothers. Remember, that deed, the one signed by Susan's other heirs,
right,
specifically mentioned the 1922 deed, even though it was missing at the time.
Right. It almost felt like a casual aside in the document. Oh, by the way, there's another deed out there somewhere that might be important.
Exactly. But in the eyes of the law, that seemingly minor detail was crucial. The court essentially said that the 1928 quitclaim deed acted as a public notice.
Okay.
A red flag waving to anyone buying the property after that point.
Mm-hmm.
Put everyone on notice that there was a prior deed out there, even if they couldn't locate it.
So it wasn't enough for the Paradise Brothers to just look at the, you know, the more recent documents related to the sale.
Mm-hmm.
They had a duty to dig deeper and investigate that earlier 1922 deed, even though it was missing. That's a pretty significant responsibility, would you say?
Absolutely. The court emphasized that anyone purchasing property after that 1928 quitclaim deed had a legal obligation to investigate further.
Yeah.
And determine the rights granted in that earlier deed. They couldn't just assume they were getting full ownership.
I'm starting to understand why this case is still sitting today. It's a powerful reminder that property ownership can be far more complex than it appears on the surface.
Yeah.
Were there any other legal principles at play that contributed to the court's decision?
Yes. The court also underscored a fundamental concept in property law. You can't get more rights than the person you're buying from.
Okay.
In this case, the Paradise Brothers purchased the property from someone who only had a life estate.
Right.
Remember, Maud couldn't sell the farm outright. She only had the right to use it during her lifetime.
So even if the Paradise Brothers were acting in good faith and had no idea about the missing deed, they were still limited by the rights of the person they bought the property from. That seems like a pretty important point for anyone buying real estate to understand.
It is.
Yeah.
The court was essentially saying, look, the Paradise Brothers might have thought they were buying the entire farm,
right,
but they were actually only purchasing Maud's limited interest, her life estate. The ultimate ownership, the right to the property after her death, still belonged to the remainder men, Maud's children.
This case is like a legal onion. Every layer we peel back reveals another fascinating detail. Did the Paradise Brothers make any other attempts to claim ownership?
They did. They tried to argue that they'd acquired ownership through something called prescriptive title, yeah, more commonly known as adverse possession. You might be familiar with this concept.
Yeah, I've heard of it. It's the idea that if you openly live on and use a property for a certain period of time, you can eventually claim ownership, even if you didn't have, you know, a clear legal title to begin with. But I'm guessing that argument didn't fly in this case.
You're right. The court rejected that argument, pointing out that the clock couldn't even start ticking on the Paradise Brothers' claim until Maud passed away in 1972.
Now, why is that? It seems like they were living on and using the property for a significant amount of time.
The key here is that until Maud died, her children, the remainder men, couldn't legally take possession of the property. They had a future interest, but Maud was still the one with the right to use and occupy the farm. So the Paradise Brothers couldn't claim their possession was adverse or hostile to the heirs' rights because the heirs couldn't actually assert those rights until Maud's death.
So their possession wasn't considered adverse because Maud's children couldn't legally challenge it until their right to the property kicked in. Wow, talk about a complex legal situation.
This case really highlights the intricate nuances of property law and especially the potential complications that can arise from life estates and unclear ownership. But what's even more interesting is how these legal principles play out in real-world scenarios. Let's shift gears and explore what this case means for our listeners. You know, those who might be navigating property transactions or estate planning in their own lives.
That's a great idea. Let's translate this legal saga into some practical takeaways.
Yeah.
I'm ready to dive into the so what of all this. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Mm-hmm.
We've been unpacking this incredibly interesting case, Harper v. Paradise.
Yeah.
And it really puts a spotlight on the complexities of property law, especially, you know, when it comes to life estates, unclear ownership, and the impact of lost deeds.
Yeah.
So let's shift gears a bit. What does all this mean for us non-lawyers out there?
Right.
What are the, you know, the key takeaways we should keep in mind if we're ever dealing with real estate or estate planning?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways from this case, and it's a lesson that echoes through legal history,
yeah,
is the critical importance of thorough title searches any real estate transaction.
Right.
Imagine the shock of thinking you own a property outright only to have someone show up with a decades-old deed that proves otherwise.
Oh, man.
Harper v. Paradise drives home the point that even a seemingly clear title can conceal hidden surprises.
Yeah.
Sometimes going back generations.
It's a stark reminder that you can't just rely on, like, the most recent documents or assume that everything is as it appears.
Right.
A comprehensive title search, one that goes back as far as possible. I mean, they can uncover crucial information.
Right.
About past transactions, restrictions on the property, and even, you know, those lost deeds. That can totally change the picture.
Exactly. It's all about due diligence, really. Taking those extra steps to ensure you're fully aware of the history of a property before you buy it can save you a world of trouble.
So lesson number one, folks. A thorough title search is worth its weight in gold. What other practical advice can we, you know, learn from this legal saga?
This case is also a cautionary tale about the risks involved in buying property from someone who only has a life estate.
Right.
As we saw with the Paradise Brothers, you know, they purchased the property assuming they were getting full ownership.
Right.
But they were only acquiring Maud's limited rights to the farm for her lifetime. And that misconception ultimately cost them dearly.
That's a good point. Even if everything seems like legit on the surface, there could be underlying ownership issues that could come back and, you know, bite ya later on. Kind of unsettling, to be honest.
Yeah. It underscores the importance of understanding the nature of the seller's interest in a property.
Right.
If you're buying from someone with only a life estate,
right,
it's essential to recognize those inherent limitations. What rights do they actually have? What happens to the property after their death?
Right.
These are questions you need to have answered before you commit to a purchase.
Okay. So lesson number two, everyone. Know who you're buying from and what rights they actually possess. Any other nuggets of wisdom we can get from Harper v. Paradise?
Well, this case also speaks volumes about the importance of clear documentation and communication when it comes to estate planning.
Right.
Susan Harper's decision to grant Maud a life estate, while well-intentioned, ultimately created you know, a chain reaction of legal complications, especially with that missing deed adding fuel to the fire.
It really highlights the importance of, you know, getting your legal ducks in a row.
Right.
Especially when it comes to property and inheritance. What steps can you take to make sure your wishes are clearly documented and carried out, you know, even if a deed goes missing or the unforeseen circumstances arise?
Well, a well-drafted will is a good starting point. Okay.
Making sure all deeds are properly recorded, maintaining meticulous records.
Yeah.
Those things can help prevent headaches and disputes down the road.
It's all about clarity and, like, foresight, isn't it?
Right.
Anticipating potential issues and, yeah, making sure your intentions are, you know, super clear to avoid, like, ambiguity or unintended consequences for your heirs.
Precisely. And, you know, while this case primarily focuses on, you know, the legal intricacies of property ownership.
Right.
It also hints at the human side of these situations. Imagine the emotional turmoil for both Maud's children and the Paradise Brothers. They were thrust into this unexpected legal battle, you know, years after they thought the matter was settled.
It's a good reminder that property disputes aren't just about legal principles. They involve real people, families, and often, like, a sense of history and emotional attachment to the land.
Exactly.
Right.
And while we can't always predict every legal twist and turn life might throw our way,
being informed, seeking expert advice, and taking proactive steps can certainly help minimize the risks and protect our interests.
This has been an incredibly insightful deep dive into Harper v. Paradise. It's amazing how a case from the 1970s still has, you know, so much relevance today.
Right.
It reminds us that property law, with its focus on, you know, ownership, inheritance, and the complexities of legal documentation, is more relevant than ever.
I couldn't agree more. As we navigate the ever-evolving world of real estate transactions, estate planning, and legal complexities, cases like this offer invaluable guidance and serve as cautionary tales, reminding us to proceed with knowledge, diligence, and perhaps a touch of healthy skepticism.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Harper v. Paradise. We hope you found it as insightful as we did. Remember, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to protecting your rights and navigating the intricate world of property law. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep.